This is a Live Women Authors of Achievement podcast, episode 90, with guest Catherine Anselm. Hello, everyone. I'm your host, Daria Savodova, and today I welcome you to a live edition of the show recorded from the eclectic Kreuzberg-based showroom Objekte unserer Tage with an audience of over 85 people. In this episode, we dive into a journey of a courageous woman who, in the early stages of her career, had to face self-doubt. From her beginnings in management consulting to her current role as the managing director at Airbnb, Catherine Anselm has been recognizing crises as opportunities for growth, discovering her resilience, and the journey to self-confidence. In this episode, Catherine shares how she conquered the fear of the unknown and challenged the beliefs that were present in her upbringing. Addressing societal pressures on family building, she advocates for individual autonomy and living lives on own terms. We speak about journaling, positive affirmations, staying active, and how she's investing in herself. I invite you to today's episode, which encapsulates a journey to self-discovery and resilience, guided by empathy and conscious growth. And remember, if you enjoy today's episode, don't forget to rate it and review on your favorite podcast platform. I really love reading your comments and feedback. Catherine Anselm, I would love to welcome you to the stage. We have a partner look.
Hi, everyone. In case you wonder, I brought a glass of tea because, and that also explains my really blocked nasal voice. I have caught the mother of viral infection, so bear with me. Also, if we are networking afterwards, don't be surprised if I'm not maybe shaking your hand or hugging you, which I typically do. I'm a hugger. Not tonight.
Thank you, Catherine, for making it and being with us despite it all. And let us know if you need additional tea along the way.
I'm good. But before we start, I just want to give a quick shout out to Daria. I have to say, she was so persistent in a really nice, amazing way. And typically I say, and that's really true, like at Airbnb, you know, Airbnb is really good at rolling three jobs into one. We are all very thinly stretched. My comms team for my 25 countries is really a small team. So we select speaker events, press, podcasts. But then Daria reached out and I thought, that is such an amazing side hustle, you know, on top of her day job. And she was really persistent. She pinged me on Instagram. She pinged me on LinkedIn. And then I gave in. I thought, you know, this is what you need to... A, I'm all about giving back. So I want to make time for these formats that are not, you know, maybe 100% commercially relevant for Airbnb, but they are fun for me and hopefully fun for you. And the second is, I think you need to honor that kind of persistence and drive.
Thank you.
Thank you for being that person.
Thank you, Catherine. Well, that's one of my qualities. I'm very persistent. And when I saw you, I was like, I would love to have Catherine on the show no matter what. So I'm just going to spam her. And at some point, I hope she responds to me. So thank you for not thinking I'm too intense. So one lesson today, be persistent, right? Catherine, it's just wonderful to have you today. And funnily enough, you know, Airbnb is the topic we're all very familiar with. And for me personally, I was just returning back from Argentina. And thanks to Airbnb, I stayed there for 1 month. And I had the most amazing time. It was my home away from home. Whatever you guys are doing, this is an impact already for even being able to live somewhere and feel home. And I already was connecting on that way. But we'll talk about Airbnb later. Now I wanted to talk about your story. You know, let's kick things off by exploring your journey a little bit. And I feel that you have such a diverse career spanning through various industries, experiences. You're a person who've been everywhere. And I feel like you've been growing through like challenging yourself and putting yourself in various environments. How have you been approaching specifically your career and your professional life from the start? Have you always been this person who's like, okay, bring it in. I want to try cold water.
It's a great question, Daria. So first of all, maybe for context. So a week ago, I turned 50. So I'm probably 20 years older than you are, or maybe double your age. And I've been working for quite some time. So I started my career in 1998. I know that's a long time ago. So I've been I've been working for 26 years, really. So there is a bit of history I can look back on. And I think what's sort of for context is probably good to know how sort of how I, when, you know, where, when I sit down and I'm asked to describe my career, I always say it's a bit of a three-stage kind of thing. So in 1998, I finished my studies. And at the time, you know, when you were sort of, you came from a decent uni, you were either, you know, hunted for investment banking, product management at L'Oréal, or you went into management consulting. So I did management consulting and did that for 5 years. But then I felt I could have become partner at that at Oliver Wyman, which was my consulting firm. But I always felt this kind of business wasn't for me. I wasn't just excited selling consulting products. I always felt like I'm much more excited about executing the ideas we're putting on slides. So that started the second part of my career, and I spent some time with big media corporate companies. I worked for Kabel Deutschland, which is today Vodafone, the biggest cable TV provider in Germany, 10 million households. And then because it's Munich, and Munich is so small and everyone is in Unterföhring, ProSiebenSat.1 just literally headhunted me across the street. In late 2009, a business partner of mine, who are a serial founder in Berlin, said to me, you know, Catherine, you're 35 now. You can either, you know, grow old in Munich and marry rich and renovate the house on the lake of your parents-in-law, or you do really something really cool and you come to Berlin. It's a true story. And I was so triggered and I thought,
that's interesting.
You know what?
So you were like, you came to Berlin with that offer?
Yeah, actually, yeah. So I quit ProSiebenSat.1. I put my furniture into storage and moved to Berlin for my first startup, which was incidentally online dating. Spoiler, I didn't get rich on that deal. We sold it after some time to Parship. But sometimes it's always good, you know, to give something to a strategic investor to make it maybe a little bit bigger. Anyway, that was sort of the third pillar of my career, which, you know, in 2010, I started in tech. It was early days in Berlin. There weren't a lot of female founders. There weren't a lot of female C-levels in tech. We were a small group, really. This is where I'm still today. So yes, you're right. Actually, I came from management consulting. I spent some time at media companies and then moved into tech and covered a lot of business models from marketplaces, e-commerce, etc. How did I approach that? And it was always that it sounds like, you know, I'm a very courageous and brave person. And we talked about this when we prepared for the podcast. And that's maybe the first message I want to give. No, I'm not. I've never been, actually. I still struggle with a lot of, you know, self-doubt, and I have terrible bouts of lack of self-confidence. But I think what drove me was two things. A, and that sounds a little bit cheesy now that I'm at Airbnb, I always thought when I finish my university studies and I will start to work, I want to see really a lot of things. And in a way, working for me is like traveling, right? There's so much still to explore and still out there. So I'm at Airbnb this year, 5 years. It's the second time in my career I have a job for 5 years. So maybe at some point, you know, doing something else. I think I always went where the pain was. I was never like super brave and courageous, but I felt there is a lot to discover and it would be a shame to not do that. And the second was, you know, maybe some of you can relate. I grew up in a modest environment. My parents didn't have a lot of money. And for me, I was most driven by being financially independent. I looked forward to start working at 24 and just earn an S load of money. Yeah. And that, I think that drove me as well. It's not super healthy, you know, to be only motivated by money, but I think that made me overcome my fear of the unknown and just made me just also take on opportunities that just where, you know, came along. Lucky girl I was.
Did that change eventually? Did you feel like you were looking for more the impact, something else?
Yeah, that changed actually. So maybe some of you can relate to that, right? If I look back, I grew up in my family with a set of beliefs, you know, hard work pays off. The longer and harder you work, you know, the more successful you will be. Success equals money. Money, you know, you put on a savings account just to be sure that you are safe for old age. You don't necessarily, you know, you don't take credit from banks. You just, you know, you pay everything right instantly. And so for me, financial independence was a big thing. In the beginning, and maybe it was also the time, I have to admit, I was a lot motivated by also, you know, the title and the status. Being in management consulting was a world of its own. You had, you know, we're collecting Lufthansa miles and Hyatt points, and everyone was a consultant and you were traveling the world. But ultimately, over time, what I realized, and I'm really happy to be, you know, at that place in my life, is that being, you know, money, and that's such a simple truth, money alone doesn't make you happy, right? Now that I look back and I'm financially much more independent, which is an amazing feeling, you know, an amazing situation to be in. But now I realized, you know, titles are futile. Ultimately, what counts is that you can really identify with the work you're doing. And I have to say, I pick jobs, you know, great opportunities, you know, a tech founder selling me the greatest pitches of all and the valuation of their company. I took those opportunities because I was excited also about the idea and the status of the role. But today, when a headhunter calls me, I say, you know, I'm only really good at my job when, you know, the product resonates with me, because it feels like my antennas are more sharp, my brain connects better, I'm able to take more impulses and incorporate them into my work and relate to what I'm actually doing. And the second is, and I was lucky with Airbnb, I only learned at Airbnb how important for me it is to marry profit with impact. It's a very privileged situation to be in. And today I can say, this is what really matters to me. And that changed over time. I had to learn it, to be honest.
We will speak more about Airbnb, but that's interesting that you say that. Do you think the reason that you can approach it this way is because you built that financial independence in your 20s, that right now you're more focused on impact? Or do you feel if you would look back and go back, you would choose impact plus a business model from the start?
It's a good question. I think the honest answer is the first, I believe. As I said, you know, it's, I admire everyone who's so, you know, at a young age already so clear in his or her ambitions and view on the world, say, you know, I don't care as much about money and financial independence. I really want to make, first of all, my priority number one is impact. I wasn't that person. I had to just, you know, find that financial independence and stability to just, you know, be courageous and think about what I actually want. So the very true answer is it was a journey, but I think it was also the time. I have to admit, you know, I'm just looking at you guys, you know, when I was in my mid and late 20s, no one thought about impact at work. It was just not something that, you know, anyone talked about, right? We were about, you know, getting, you know, more women in leadership roles. But having impact with your work and being able to merit profit with impact wasn't a thing, really. So you are so lucky. Where you are right now, this is just such a natural topic and something that is so clear as a priority in your work. So it's actually a really exciting time to be in the workplace.
That's great to hear. At the same time, the times are a bit challenging, you know, with inflation rates, with a lot of things happening around the world. What would you choose, taking the risk, doing also very, you know, bold career transitions and career changes, or choose safety?
I think it's a very individual decision. What I would say, first of all, you know, be gentle with yourself. Not everyone is built to be extremely bold and courageous and brave, right? And be the careless person and being the optimistic person. And that's something I had to learn over time too. Like my partner is one of the most optimistic persons on planet Earth, and it rubs onto me, this is one of the many features I love about him. It's not me. I always have been, and probably always will be, at least conscious now, a glass half empty person. I tend to see the risks. I tend to hedge, you know, and be a little bit more on the safe side. It's a very personal decision. But where I stand now is, if I look back and would just look at my younger self, I would probably say, be more bold, you know, worry less, try more. What's the worst that can happen, actually? So in a way, probably my answer would develop from very individually, I tend to play it safe, to, you know what, let's just do it.
I like that. That's always a, you know, safe bet, just to see how it goes and going also with the flow and what life gives you. Through your career, I can imagine there's many relationships you've been building, many partnerships along the way. What does it mean for you, looking back, focusing not on transactional relationships, but actually creating meaningful connections with people? Do you think there are people who impacted your career and your life trajectory through that?
Yeah, I don't think they are here tonight. For me, I'd say my circle of girlfriends, and they are all, by now we're sort of the same, roughly the same age cohort, and they are amazing women, successful in their own right. And they are my circle of trust. This is the group of girls I call first when I think about career decisions, you know, career developments, investments, matters of the heart. So also I learned that over time, because in my 20s, I was so focused on work and, you know, and building a career and just dedicating everything to work, which is easy in consulting because you're surrounded by people who work just 7 days a week. I think I neglected that a little bit in my 20s, and I was lucky that I had especially women in my life who just didn't give up on me and just, you know, remain persistent. And today, these are the most valuable connections I have. We've been through thick and thin, and it is especially empowering and satisfying to see that these women are, you know, in senior leadership roles. They are building companies. They are investing in companies. They are solving societal problems, and they remain like really grounded people who always have an ear for me and are just, you know, a phone call away.
And it's a question to the audience. Did you come today with your support group? Did you meet someone who you feel connected? Yes? Yes? Nice. Cheers to that. So everyone is already building it, you see? So that's very important.
That's good to hear.
That's wonderful. Can you tell me about your first experience with Airbnb?
So my first experience with Airbnb was, funnily enough, I discovered Airbnb in the early days. I was an early user at Airbnb, but I didn't use it regularly because it wasn't that big yet. It was a bit weird.
Which year are we talking?
We're talking 2012. And that was actually pretty exciting. I had booked a room in an apartment in New York. I told my friends and my family, they were like, you really sure you want to do this? And I said, yeah.
Do you know the people? Is this safe?
Yeah, exactly. It was, I would need to look up the area in Manhattan, but it wasn't like the super safest area. And everyone was like, are you sure you want to do this? And I was like, yeah. I arrived in New York. It was late evening. It was a bit of a weird, you know, street and a weird area. And it was raining. And then I entered this apartment, and it was really from the outside, you know, very run down. And I was like, that can't be a good idea. But then, and I think that really, in a way, paved the way for years later when Airbnb called me and asked me to join their company. A really friendly older woman opened the door, and it was the cutest apartment. It was all brick walls. She was, you know, like this bohemian New York woman who had like endless stories to tell. She
had like authentic experience.
Then she was like, oh, I'm going out tonight. There's someone else staying in the other room. And I was like, I just literally had relaxed. And then I was like, oh my God, who is this? Yeah, who am I staying with here tonight? It was really, really friendly guy. And we ended up cooking dinner and chatting. And this is where actually that was my first experience with Airbnb. And then years later, you know, the circle closed.
And now you're managing director for 25 countries, right?
Yeah.
This is a lot. So let's talk about it. I mean, how does it feel to work for a Silicon Valley founded company, which is so successful out across Europe, across the world? Like, how does it feel for you? And is it different to where, like, the environments you were before in?
Yeah. So every day it's very emotional because every day something amazing happens and something really frustrating happens.
Many can relate here? Yes. Oh my.
I tell you why. So to answer your question, yes, it is different to what I've been doing before. Airbnb is the first Silicon Valley tech company and an international matrix. I've never worked in a matrix organization before. I was always, you know, in the headquarter. I was part of the managing director in a team in the headquarter. So it really felt like you have things under control. And working in an international matrix that is run out of Silicon Valley is, you know, for an amazing product like Airbnb is wonderful every single day. But on the other hand, you know, I've been spending 4.5 years now at Airbnb, probably explaining once a week to someone in San Francisco how my countries actually work and that Germany is different to the US, right? And that Europe has many different countries and it's not the same as the US. So I'm joking here. I don't know, is anyone working maybe at Apple, Amazon, Meta, or Google here? No?
I see a few hands.
Okay. Yeah, so you might be able to relate. I see some nods, yeah. So That makes it different. But what makes it truly amazing is that I love the product, and Airbnb does a fantastic job when it comes to core values. Oftentimes at previous companies, I've been the COO or the managing director heading also HR, maybe for the one reason that I was most of the time the only woman in the team. And then they said, oh, let Catherine do HR. I have to say Airbnb really, I've never worked for a company where core values are being taken that seriously. It's part of the recruiting process. We take people out of the recruiting funnel if they are not passing core value interviews. It happens regularly. It's part of my regular evaluation. It's truly part of the DNA of Airbnb, and that makes that one of the values, for example, is be a host. It sounds a bit cheesy, I know, because host and...
Are you a host or so?
And no, unfortunately not anymore, because my landlord doesn't allow it. But be a host is a value at Airbnb, and be a host really means that you can be yourself at work. And it sounds weird, but what I mean with that is this is what I felt when I joined Airbnb. So I did my onboarding in San Francisco, came back to my team in Berlin, and they asked me, so how was onboarding? And I said, yeah, it was fantastic. And something else I wanted to share with you, really in my first all hands, was thank you for allowing me to be myself. I can be grumpy. I have a weird sense of humor. I tend to be a terrible perfectionist. But at Airbnb, because be a host is so deeply ingrained, the first thing you do is to try to put yourself in the shoes of the other and be empathetic. And that's something that is so extremely helpful for all of our work. I think truly that is part of why we are lucky, are so successful.
Well, that sounds like a wonderful work environment. Do you have a job opportunities, openings? I mean, in case someone is looking in Berlin.
I get this question really often. The thing is, the pandemic, I mean, for many of us was, you know, business-wise really, really terrible. We lost overnight 80% of our business, and we were beleaguered by journalists for weeks at end when Airbnb, you know, asking us, you know, when's Airbnb shutting down? So we still tend to be very, very cautious. And I have in the Berlin office is a smaller office. We have a headcount of 60 or so. I have only two open roles. So we are very cautious and still very cautious in ramping up. But it's definitely a workplace I can recommend. Well,
I would love to ask you, you know, since you've been in so many leadership roles, like what are the fundamental principles that you personally follow that's important to you as a leader?
Couple of things. So first of all, actually starting with what I just said, I've been working in so many different business models. And I think a common theme always that one of the hacks maybe that saw me through, especially the first months and the first year, which is always the most difficult, was, you know, I'm trying to put myself in other people's shoes. You know, the first thing I do when I'm starting a new job and typically in a leadership role is to really sit down with the people and understand what drives them, what motivates them, what is scary to them, right? So that's something that really helps me to understand the probably my number one priority, and that is how good is the team I can rely on and the team that helps me thrive in a new environment. The second is, and that's something, a muscle I think I developed only over time, and especially at Airbnb, because I saw Brian Chesky cry on the phone during the pandemic and during the one time we had to lay off people. You know, leading with authority and leading with empathy and being, you know, vulnerable is not exclusive. It's actually the strongest combination I believe you can have as a leader. You know, being out there and lead people and stand up and guide them, but at the same time be vulnerable and show them that you struggle too. At least that's the feedback from my teams, make for a really good leader. Yeah, I think those are, I mean, two of many learnings, I think.
Thank you for sharing. And the vulnerability one is very inspiring because, right, a lot of us do not like to maybe show that side of us. And especially when you're in leadership role, you're trying to have high expectations of the team. What is that balance between setting expectations and having like strong objectives, but also being personal and allowing that space to connect with the person? I think that's a very tough balance also to strike. Do you have any recommendations, maybe techniques that help you to connect with people personally and be vulnerable, but also have that effective environment, which is...
Again, I think I learned, so I don't know for your companies, at Airbnb, we still follow the principle work where, from where you are the most productive, which for most of us is from home. you need to come to the office policy. It's really up to everyone, right, to decide. And that makes that my leadership style actually had to change. So I tend to say I'm not controlling my team, is I lead them. I prioritize working really hard on making goals specific and tangible and measurable and aligning with my teams on them. And but then, you know, let everyone work in their sort of in their own time and at their own terms to just deliver on the results. That's one thing. So that makes me a leader who is sort of, you know, defines a very clear North Star and gives the direction, but at the same time gives a lot of freedom for people to just, you know, find their own rhythm and just to deliver on the results. And the other is that empathy and vulnerability part. Times are stressful, right? And I think we live in, you know, we often hear, and I think it's true, it's a perma crisis kind of time. So you just need to acknowledge that. And again, something, a muscle we started training during the pandemic, we actually kept, is that probably every single meeting and every single Zoom call I do, I start with really asking, how are you? How are you today? And I know a lot sort of about my employees' families and the kids. I see them regularly and I know if they have a doctor's appointment and I can tell when they don't feel well or if something amazing happened, then they want to share it. And it doesn't take a long time. It's just a couple of minutes, but it gives a space where people feel safe to share the good and the bad. And if my learning is, if you let people, you know, just give them the space and let them, you know, get things off their chest, they are fully focused and ready to perform and deliver on their work. And I think that's a very sensible investment of my time. And the elegant side effect is it gives me the opportunity to be vulnerable too. So they ask me too, so how are you today? My face is like an open book. My team can read me really well. And I've been at 4.5 years at Airbnb and I went through 2 very terrible personal crises during these times. And I cried with my team. Sometimes I had to switch off my Zoom camera and just cried. And then, you know, elegantly, one of my direct reports just took over the meeting. And being able to do that is the biggest privilege I can think of. But it makes me also a better leader and it makes my teams more performant. So whoever is in a manager role here and, you know, might have experienced the same, really curious to hear how you handle this in your teams. Or maybe it's an inspiration for you when you think about how you, you know, want to step up as a leader.
Thank you so much for sharing this. I mean, it goes perfectly with the first message for tonight about being a good person and also trying to hear people out, to be good, to not rely on the conscious bias or environmental bias, but trying to accept people as they are in the situation they are. And also about vulnerability, because it's not the easiest. And hearing it from you, I think, is very inspirational, because the next actually question that I had in mind is, you, Catherine, you're recognized, right, as one of the top women in tech and business in Germany, Europe, by Handelsblatt and Focus magazine. But I wanted to ask you, what are you most proud of yourself?
That's a hard question, because the true answer is, and I mentioned that, you know, because I think it's important to share. I struggle with self-confidence. And also, I struggle also with the question of, I'm really proud of myself. I don't find it particularly easy to just, you know, say that to myself. As again, as a bit of a personal answer, I think I just mentioned that. And the past 3 years haven't been exactly easy. You know, it's not the pandemic, but I've gone through, I mean, divorces are always terrible, but I've gone through a particularly terrible divorce and separation from my ex-husband. And then my mother died in October. You know, I was in 6 hours before I boarded a plane to San Francisco and I couldn't even say goodbye to her on that very day. What to make out of this. And I think the most proud I am looking back that in these, you know, specifically in this time where I separated from my husband, you know, realizing that a crisis is a terrible chance to waste. And if life, you know, throws like big stones at you and you sit there and say, shit, you don't know what to do. I think I'm actually really proud of that. My first reaction was, life wants to teach me a lesson here, and it's probably an opportunity to grow, right? And maybe that's the point in my life where this ton of management literature and the millions of advices in management and women's magazine now make sense, right? Make the best out of it. And I think I did. You know, it's still a journey, but these 2 incidents in my life just recently taught me so much about how much resilience I actually have in myself, which I probably wouldn't have discovered if these things hadn't happened. It's not exactly the professional successes. It's this realization that, you know, you never stop growing and you just need to make the best of the opportunity, because afterwards you're like, whoa, I've mastered that, there's not a lot I cannot master. And that's actually a really pretty cool feeling.
Thank you for sharing. And that was incredible applause. Thank you so much for that. And thank you for being so personal and open, Catherine. I think it's very appreciated, especially on the podcast, when the guests, the women I interview, share their stories and share different perspectives on life. I think it gives a full picture on who you are and what you're going through. Since we got personal, and I thought, if I may ask you a question that maybe a lot of, especially women in the room, might be asking, and in this situation where they're considering or having thoughts around the question of family, starting a family and building a career. What's your take on that?
Very good question. We discussed that a little bit when we prepared.
Don't reveal it. No. It's a surprise effect.
We'd broadly discussed how personally we would become on this podcast. But I think when I thought about this podcast, you know, and this is really for me an opportunity to give back. In my mid-20s, even my early 30s, even maybe last year, I would have appreciated having more, especially female role models in my life, you know, to not the ones that are, the ones that are here and relatable and just going through the exact same struggle, and not, you know, a politician in the US or a big author, more relatable women. So for me, it's also an opportunity to maybe just give back and share and also hear from you. I don't have kids. I have kids in my life. My partner has two boys, 5 and 8. And I'm just, you know, after my divorce, he's the new man in my life. And I'm building a relationship with young kids in my life, which is exciting, but also scary. I was like, when I met them the first time, I was like, oh God, maybe they don't like me. So what do I do? I have two nieces. So the two daughters of my sister are very close to my heart. I get to do a lot of fun stuff with them and travel with them, and they spend time with me alone. And we learn, you know, I exercise with them and train them in English for their exams and stuff like that. But I never wanted kids of my own. And I felt that very early on, probably already in my 20s. And I was lucky. I grew up in a very conservative household, but at least one thing, you know, my parents were actually pretty flexible, modern, about was they never put pressure on me to get kids, never. Funnily enough, in my 30s, the biggest source for pressure was peer women. I got so much unsolicited advice, tough advice, from not from my close girlfriends, not from my sister, but from women I barely knew or were sort of part of my broader network, saying really tough things like, you're going to regret it when you're old. You will never experience that kind of love that you will have for kids or for your own children. That was tough. And I would have wished, you know, for more women to just stand up and say, you know what, live and let live. Like, it's 2024. We are the generation who can really decide for ourselves how we want to live. If we want to have kids with a partner, if we want to have kids on our own, if we don't want to have kids. And I think I would have appreciated, you know, more men didn't, I'm just leaving out men's opinion here, because the opinion was always, you're going to regret it. But more women, you know, saying, you know what, you do you. And that's actually a message I think I want to give back and say, guys, you do you. Being a mother is amazing. Admire parents so much, you know, for getting children in the times we live in. My partner, they do, you know, he's divorced, and they really share 50-50. He has his two boys, you know, every other week alone, and his ex-wife too. I admire that deeply. But I also admire women, you know, feeling good about saying, I don't want kids, and that's okay. Because ultimately, and that's also a learning, if, you know, you want to have children in your life, they will find you, as they found me. So I feel very rich. I have the best of both worlds.
Thank you. We are slowly but steadily coming to an end of our live podcast. And I had a question, you know, Catherine, when I look at you, you're such a stunning, beautiful woman, so elegant, you know, so successful. And I thought I had, in my mind, it's like, okay, so how does she do everything? What is your approach to self-care in prioritizing physical activity, your mental health? How do you manage it all while having such a busy schedule? What's your secret sauce to that?
3 liters of water, plenty of sleep, no. I mean, that's always a good idea, but I find it actually hard to stay hydrated over the course of the day. Shout out to everyone who manages. For me, what helps me really unwind and process the days. So first of all, I was really happy the day someone introduced me, someone explained the concept of extrovert introvert to me, and I was like, whoa, that's so me.
Which one are you?
This is for me being extrovert, but then I go home and I need 4 hours with me, myself, and I, just to the introvert,
balance it out.
So, and that maybe explains that journaling for me is a big thing. I enjoy writing and I enjoy sort of finding the right words to express and note what I've experienced over the course of the day. I sort of writing is debating with myself. My journal is 3 things that made me happy. You know, by now I'm the glass half empty person, so I need to train the muscle to stay more optimistic. 3 things that made me happy really helps. So, and happiness science says you can train that muscle. So I'm really optimistic about that. The second is there's positive affirmation. Again, as I said, I struggle with self-confidence and have self-doubt. So positive affirmation helps. And then I have a third section where I just note things that, you know, kept my mind busy. And it can be anything. It can be, you know, processing the death of my mom, the guilt I have for my father because I'm not, you know, he's 6 hours train ride away and I don't want to spend like my life with him, but then I feel bad about not being there around. So it's stuff like that. So that helps me to unwind. And I am a very consistent, I consistently work out. I don't do a lot. I do maybe 15 minutes every day. And then I look at people like Alex. 15. One five, not a lot. So I have a Peloton at home, which I regularly use actually. But then there are these amazing women like Alex Hipwell, and she feels like she's working out like an hour every day. I can't do that. And then this whole, like, you need to add, you know, weight and really stress your muscles. Actually, I don't do that either. I just work out consistently. I do Pilates and body weight at home. I have some weights. And I do this also when I'm traveling. I have my resistance bands and that's what I do. And then actually, I think, and very honest, third element is an honest answer. You know, as I said, I feel amazing age 50. If that's 50, I'm like, that's actually really cool.
But
but it's also a time to, you know, to invest in your health. You know, as most of you, I have general health insurance. I'm not privately insured, but I started investing, you know, sort of my own money in my health. So I do a lot of checkups. I watch my blood results, minerals. I take supplements. I'm like a big fan of microbiome, gut and brain connection. That I read a lot about that. So that's something. That's the nerds here, the microbiome brain connection nerds. Yes, team here. Yeah, so that's what I do. Yeah, but journaling probably is the most important to me. It means a lot.
And with all of that, do you still think like work-life balance is a myth, or you feel like you found it? It's possible.
I think it's a very individual concept. I think work-life balance means something different to everyone here in the room. And I have to say, for me, it evolved over time. I used to be that person that found a lot of self-esteem, you know, in being crazy busy and writing slides on a Sunday. I find joy in my work. I work a lot, I think, just looking at my calendar, but I need to switch off. And I switch off, turn down my laptop, I put on my workout clothes, I roll out my yoga mat at home. And that's when the day is done, really. So I need to take these breaks. And really, the older you get, like, you need to prioritize sleep and you need to take breaks. And actually, and my team knows, it's not a secret, I've been struggling with my iron levels, as many of us do. And sometimes during the week, more often than not, I take half an hour nap in the afternoon just to recover. That's my way of finding a work-life balance.
We always, naps always welcomed, right? Especially during the winter period. Thank you so much, Catherine. It brings me to the last question on the show, and it's always about the woman author of achievement. It's women who I interview are incredible role models like you are, and you're an author of your own story, of your own achievements in life, which is always the guest I want to hear from, right? How do you craft your life? How do you find your way through? What is your ultimate, right, happiness looks like? And today you shared it with us, which I'm very grateful for. But who is the woman that you are looking up to or you consider a role model for yourself?
It ties back to what I said. I found it most helpful in my life to identify women, especially women role models that are close and relatable in a way. There have been several role models and women of achievement in my life, but I really want to highlight one person and a project that is very dear to my heart because it is something that people are too afraid and too ashamed to talk about, and that is domestic violence. So my former neighbor, Anna Herken, she was a member of board at Allianz, and she's now at Gesellschaft für internationale Zusammenarbeit, managing director. She's an amazing, you know, accomplished woman, has an MBA, is an accomplished lawyer. She co-founded an initiative that is called Die Nächste, the next one, on domestic violence. And they gathered 45 women roughly a year ago, and the focus ran a title story on these 45 women from, you know, all walks of life, academic, PhD, police women, telling their story about domestic violence, you know, and I was her neighbor and I didn't realize that she experienced domestic violence. And through her, I learned of how, no, I believe every single story now when women speak up 20 years after, you know, that there's the sexual aggression or the domestic violence happen. I experienced firsthand from my neighbor and close friend Anna and her circle of women who are all co-founders of this initiative, how you can compartmentalize this incident, push it away, how ashamed you can be and how shame can cover up this incident for years at end. And it's really important to speak up. And she is so courageous, you know, they all, these 45 women speaking up and building this initiative and winning support of every single media outlet in Germany, they've been facing so much hate and so much digital hate and in social media. And just being, you know, seeing them how courageous they are and not giving in makes me very hopeful. And I think, you know, Anna and her circle of friends and the founders of Die Nächste are really my women of achievement.
Let's give a round of applause. Thank you so much, Catherine. It's very long applauses you're getting. This is incredible, like a really, really long extended. Thank you so much for listening in. I think there was a couple of threads which I heard about from your story, but also why people are here and very visualize how special this evening is, and especially the part of being good, being vulnerable, and being honest to one another is very important. So thank you so much, Catherine, to you, for all the amazing partners and to the most incredible audience for showing up.
Thank you for joining us today. You can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. And please don't forget to leave us a review. We're always excited to read them. If you want to interact with us, the guests, or the podcast listeners, then head over to our Instagram page at waa.berlin. And while you're there, make sure to check our webshop. Thank you again for listening, and we're looking forward to being back soon.